Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In just under an hour now, President George Bush and his Democratic challenger, Senator John Kerry, square off in St. Louis, Missouri, for round two in the presidential campaign debates. Tonight's debate is billed as town hall style, with voters asking questions this time on a wide open range of domestic and foreign policy issues. There is plenty for the candidates to feast on tonight: an imminent election in Afghanistan, disappointing new job numbers at home, former U.S. top dog in Iraq, Paul Bremer, saying the Bush administration never sent enough troops, President Bush's hand-picked inspector concluding Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction and no ability to make them, and then the awful bombing of Israeli tourists in Egypt and the fingerprints of Al-Qaeda. There are 25 days now until Election Day. The race is neck and neck. These debates matter. In the first round, Senator Kerry emerged the victor. President Bush needs a strong performance tonight, but so does his challenger. Tonight on Point, Bush-Kerry, round two, the debate in St. Louis. You can join our conversation tonight. Put yourself in the hall in St. Louis tonight. What's your question for the candidates? What still needs settling? What does each candidate still have to prove? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight on the campus of Washington University in St. Louis, where tonight's debate will be held. Matthew Cooper is White House correspondent for Time magazine. He joins us now from St. Louis. Matthew, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you.
So describe the scene there, the room where this debate will unfold. This will not be like Miami. What does it look like?
I'm actually not in the hall. I want truth in advertising here. I'm in the media center, which is in an adjacent building. So the room I'm in is a giant gymnasium filled with reporters and people from the campaign.
So you're in the gym, but you must have seen, by whatever means, the room where they're going to be tonight with these two little stools.
I don't want to mislead you. I have not been in the room.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen the room.
Well, fair enough. But you understand it's a town hall setting, and that means what?
Yes, it's a town hall setting. I believe they'll be on stools. They'll be on stage. I know Bush is going to use a handheld microphone. Kerry is going to have one on his lapel, and I'm not sure where the moderator is sitting, but yes, you're right. It's a town hall format.
Well, let me set the stage here because I want to get your thoughts on how this is going to play out. It is two stools and then a kind of a theater in the round. They're on the same level as the first row of the audience, and then it goes two or three rows up behind that. Charles Gibson of ABC News will be at a table a few feet in front of them, I guess moderating the whole event. There's a small piece of tape that television viewers will not see on the floor of this hall between the two candidates that, as I understand it, Matthew Cooper, they are not permitted to cross. There will not be any nose-to-nose confrontations unless they both come to that line. What are the two candidates' camps saying about this format and how it favors or doesn't favor their respective candidates?
Well, you know, the two candidates negotiated all this, so it's not like anything's being imposed on them. But look, each side, we've seen this pattern before at the debates. Each side tries to downplay expectations. It's kind of crazy. I mean, they say, you know, if my guy shows up and has a pulse, he's won. And, you know, they're doing some of that tonight. Look, you know, the bottom line is Bush obviously didn't have a great debate last time, and he's going to try harder this time, you know, not to make some of the same mistakes he made last time about wincing and, you know, being a little off his game. And, you know, that's what people will be looking for.
Matthew, what can you tell us about the audience here that's going to be posing these questions? They're described as uncommitted voters. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, these are folks who were chosen by the Gallup polling organization. They're technically not uncommitted. They're what might be called persuadable voters. They are kind of soft for Bush or soft for Kerry, but they can be persuaded, or at least that's what they've told the pollsters and to the pollster's satisfaction. So they're coming in. They've submitted written questions to the moderator. He's going to decide which ones he wants to take, and then he'll call on the person, and the person's required to, you know, read the question as they submitted it. If they try to go off on their own on a different rant, he's obliged under this agreement to cut them off. So it's all very formal, and we'll see how they do.
And President Bush and Senator Kerry have the same time restraints as last time, 2 minutes for their initial answer, 90 seconds for a reply, and maybe another 30-second back and forth?
Yeah, I believe that's the case, with the moderator able to stretch it out a little. But it's, you know, it's obviously requires different skills. You got to talk to the audience in the room and show some connection with them. You can't speak in, you know, over their heads. On the other same hand, you got to play off the opposing candidate and speak to the TV audience. So it's, you know, it's a little trickier, I think, than the straight podium format.
And in the media hall, the gymnasium where you are, what's the expectation tonight? President Bush looks usually pretty comfortable in this kind of town hall meeting. He does it often with crowds.
Yeah, well, both sides have. Kerry's done a lot of these. The Bush has generally done it with quite friendly audiences, so it's... It'll be interesting to see how he reacts if he gets a particularly tough question. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I think people really think this is – all the debates are pivotal, but I think this is pivotal. I mean, it's really, I think, you know, we'll know a lot more about the way the presidential race is shaping up after tonight.
And why pivotal squared tonight, Matthew?
Because I think the race is now tightened. And I think impressions are really formed. I think if Kerry were to just blow Bush out of the water two debates in a row, I think it'd be very hard for Bush to kind of recoup in the third one. And likewise, I think if Bush comes back, he can kind of reset the thermostats where it was before the first debate.
Super high stakes. Matthew Cooper in St. Louis tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Matthew Cooper, White House correspondent for Time Magazine. In just under or over 50 minutes now, the candidates will meet in this town hall setting in St. Louis. We're joined now from Washington by Bill Schneider, senior political analyst at CNN, who's been watching the race all along and will certainly be watching tonight. Bill Schneider, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And also with us tonight, our own On Point News analyst, Jack Beatty, joining us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Bill Schneider, we just heard Matt Cooper with Time Magazine say this debate is pivotal squared. People tend to talk that way, and yet that does seem to be the sense. What are the stakes tonight?
Oh, they're very high. I mean, people were, I think, dismayed by Bush's performance in that first debate, and I think it really shook up this race. We're showing the polls tightening up. They've really become too close to call in state after state and nationally. I think a lot of people are wondering, you know, can they vote for Bush for another term? And is Kerry really an acceptable candidate? Because the Bush campaign has been spending so much money trying to portray him as someone outside the mainstream, a waffler or a flip-flopper. They've taken another look at Kerry, and I think they're rethinking this race, and that's what they're going to be doing in these last two debates.
I'm looking at an AP poll here of 944 likely voters, shows Kerry Edwards leading Bush Cheney 50% to 46%, 3% margin of error, but this is a new kind of matchup. Others, as you say, have them just literally neck and neck. I saw, I believe, CNN with 48, Bush Cheney 46. Kerry Edwards, how much flexibility do you see still in these numbers, Bill?
Oh, I think there's some flexibility because I think Bush is right at the 50% mark. When people his approval rating is 50%, people aren't sure they want to rehire him or fire him. He's not in deep trouble the way Jimmy Carter was in 1980, but he's not a sure thing the way Ronald Reagan was in 84 or Bill Clinton in 1996. I think they're on the line about Bush. I think the news from Iraq this week, from the Iraq study group and the various events that have happened, have shocked a lot of people. The jobs figures were not good, and they just have to be convinced that John Kerry is a reasonable and acceptable alternative, and then you may see the polls begin to tip. But they have to be convinced of that in these debates.
Both candidates have been very tough on the road this week, tough on each other, but at long distance, not in the same hall. President Bush, particularly tough, aggressive comments. Can he bring that kind of aggressive comment into this hall and win with it in the same way that he does before his friendly Republican audiences on the hustings, Bill Schneider?
In a word, no. Voters don't like negative campaigning. They're going to be very hostile to it. While the voters can't ask follow-up questions, we know from town hall after town hall since 1992 that voters have very little patience with candidates who start attacking each other in front of the voters. That's a very difficult thing to do, and they'll figure out some way to show their disapproval. What Bush has done has been fairly interesting. The Republicans have made this campaign so far really a referendum on John Kerry. We found in the vice presidential debate the other night, Kerry's name was mentioned 65 times. Bush's name came up 8 times. If you expand that to include references to the president, That would be 35 times, which means that the Republicans have really made it about John Kerry. In the end, however, I believe this race, like all races when an incumbent is running for re-election, is going to end up being a referendum on the incumbent. But that's the shift we're waiting to see.
Jack Beatty, join us here. Lots of news has come out this week. It'll surely be front and center in the debate tonight on the economy, on Iraq, comments by the president's own hand-picked folks in Iraq, Paul Bremer from the CIA, Mr. Dulfer. What are you expecting tonight, Jack?
Well, it's hard to imagine a worse preparation for Mr. Bush. I mean, these are his own people making these statements. But if I might, Tom, let me just inoculate our listeners against falsehoods. The Washington Post, the New York Times, Boston Globe have done a rundown of some of the misrepresentations the candidates have been using, mostly Bush, on the campaign trail. The American Heritage Dictionary defines lie as something meant to deceive or give a wrong impression. And the listener can make that judgment himself. If Mr. Bush says that Kerry would have to wait for a grade from other nations and leaders, quote unquote, before acting to protect itself,
this global test that Kerry,
yeah, that's not true. If Bush says that Kerry wants to impose, quote, Hillary care on America, a big federal bureaucracy to handle health care, that's not true. If Bush says Kerry wants to set artificial timetables for pulling troops out of Iraq, that's not true. If Bush says that Kerry voted for tax hikes 98 times, that is only true if you count the sort of procedural tax things. You have to vote several times on the same bill. Essentially, it's not true. If he says that that Kerry wants to raise taxes on the middle class, that's not true.
Jeff, this inoculation is all about the Republican flu so far. What about the Democratic flu?
Well, let me finish with Bush.
Okay.
If he says he wants to cut the deficit in half in 5 years, well, that's only true if he doesn't pass the main prop of his program, which is making the tax cuts permanent. On Kerry, if he says that we've spent $200 billion on Iraq, that's not true. We spent $120 billion. Won't be till late next year we reach $200 billion, but we'll reach it. If he says we have 90% of the casualties, coalition forces, not true, 88%. And if he says we're going to bring the allies in, that'll be the deus ex machina. Elect Kerry and the French and the Russians and the Germans will go and have their soldiers shot at and bombed just the way we are. That's not a lie, but I can't believe that Kerry really believes it.
Bill Schneider, Jack Beatty's putting the truth meter to this. John Kerry came out of his preparation bunker in Colorado yesterday to make a statement, used the word truth 8 times in 8 minutes. Is truth and honesty going to be a major debating point tonight?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I can't disagree with anything Jack said about the allegations on both sides. Mm-hmm. Both candidates sometimes stretch the truth, but I think George Bush in many ways makes pretty wild accusations about John Kerry. The truth is going to be a big issue here, because what the Democrats are saying is you can't trust anything the Republicans are telling you. There's even a lot of suspicion that if Bush is reelected, he'll reinstate the draft. That's why the Republicans voted down the draft bill, although it's not clear it's been killed, just to make a statement that's not going to happen. It's all over the internet. And a poll that came out today showed that a majority of people, voters under the age of 30, believe that Bush wants to reinstate the draft. So there's a whole rather nasty debate about that, with Republicans charging that Democrats are spreading that rumor to scare voters.
And, Bill, finally, when you look out at the electorate tonight, when these candidates look out, is there a particular image of a voter they have in mind that they need to persuade tonight? They've each got their base. Who are they picturing when they speak to the camera this evening?
I think they're picturing women, particularly married women, who have been pretty strongly for Bush. Single women are very strongly for Kerry. But I think those married women have a lot of questions about the economy, questions about the war, about what will happen to their children. I think those middle-aged married women, currently pretty strongly for Bush because they're very security conscious, have a lot of problems with the Bush record, and those are the people Kerry is going to try to get.
And why hasn't he got them yet, in a word, Bill?
Security, because they feel that Bush is stronger, more protective. These are the so-called security moms. And they worry about Kerry because the image has been painted of him as a waverer, someone who vacillates, someone who can't be relied on. Many of them are mothers. They worry about their families. They worry about their kids. And they feel more secure with Bush right now. But they also worry an awful lot about the economy and an awful lot about Iraq.
Bill Schneider, always terrific talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Bill Schneider, senior political analyst at CNN. Jack Beatty, please stand by. Listeners, we are making the run up here to Bush Kerry Round 2, the debate in St. Louis. You can join us. You saw Round 1. You heard the VP candidates. What are you looking for tonight? It's not supposed to be all Iraq tonight. What else do you want to hear from Bush and Kerry? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about the Bush-Kerry debates, round two in St. Louis, coming up in just about 40 minutes now. The debates will be held tonight in a so-called town hall-style forum on the campus of Washington University in St. Louis. The two candidates with stools, I don't know, about, well, just the height where they will neither be standing nor really fully sitting. Small tables next to each chair, rows of freestanding chairs in a kind of more than a semicircle around the candidates, and ABC's Charles Gibson moderating and choosing questions that have already been submitted by audience members. They're supposed to be persuadable voters, we hear tonight, not partisans of either camp. Each candidate with a lot on the line this evening. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? Do you expect a repeat of round one tonight or something different from these two men after this last week in this new setting? What does each candidate still have to prove in these debates, in this debate tonight? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Beatty is with us tonight, and now I'm joined in the studio by Joan Vinaki, columnist for the Boston Globe and election watcher extraordinaire. Joan, thanks for being with us tonight.
Nice to be here, Tom.
And by Jim Nuzzo, Republican political strategist, contributor to the National Review Online. He was deputy director of economic and domestic policy for George H.W. Bush, the sitting president's father. Jim Nuzzo, wonderful to have you tonight.
Tom, it's great here.
So you have been hearing, Jim, President Bush is getting a pretty tough going over in the run-up to this. You know, you don't do so well in the first debate. You get some bad news kind of swarming around, and pretty soon you've got a tough audience. Is that how you see it tonight?
Well, I think we're taking a look at sort of almost a replay of 1984. If you remember, at that time, President Reagan had a less than sort of stellar first debate. Now, the question then was he up to it or not? It really didn't move numbers in the first debate, but it put the election in play. And I think what we saw here, again, is the same thing. I'm going to disagree with something that was being said in the first section. My looking at sort of the internals of the numbers that we're getting from various polls demonstrate that there was a blip that has returned back to where it was before the debate. But that doesn't mean that Bush is out of the woods. What it basically says is, you know, I had some concern, but I like him. But I really am concerned at the end of the day as to whether what I saw in the first debate is a look behind the curtain or whether or not it was a bad day. We all have bad days. If Bush is like Reagan in 84 with the second debate, comes out strong, takes the pressure off himself, demonstrates more from attitude, more from atmospherics than anything he says specifically, then I think that an awful lot of these wavering, normally Bush supporters will say, fine, what we saw last week, for whatever reason, was an aberration. I can do what I wanted to do, which is to go and vote for Bush.
Well, let me ask you then, do you see this, Jim, as being about Bush's style or his substance? I mean, you seem to be saying a couple of things happened last week. What was it, the grimacing, the kind of peeved look on the president's face, the hunched shoulders? Is it all that? Or has the core kind of logic matrix of the Bush-Cheney campaign been cracked a little bit in the last week?
If you take a look again, when we look at polls, there are two ways to look at polls. The professionals don't look at the overt number, but they look underneath it. Has there been radical changes in the way in which the people view either Bush or Kerry on the economy, Bush or Kerry on terror, Bush or Kerry on Iraq? What was fascinating was that the Bush numbers dropped on the main number. Are you going to vote for Bush? Are you going to vote for Kerry? But they didn't change in the internals, which suggested to me, as I sort of looked at that data, that what it really was an issue of atmospherics. Was he up to the job? I mean, what was fascinating to me, Tom, was immediately after the debate, the next day, the Democratic National Committee put out a 51-second rebuttal piece on George Bush. Not one of the pieces contained anything substantively that George Bush said. It was his grimacing. It was his hunched shoulders. It was his yawning. It was sort of a feeling of, you know, this guy just isn't up to the job from an atmospheric standpoint.
Joan, I don't know, on the poll front here, I mean, Jim's looking at the polls. What I've looked at tonight, on the one hand, it looks like tied or even Kerry pulling ahead for the first time in a long time, ever. And even inside, I've seen on willingness, here we are on this AP poll, on the president's personal qualities, on the war in Iraq, on national security itself, Bush's position slipping.
Well, I'm not going to try to be an expert on polls, so I'll just give you, how about that? I'll give you my... I think more like a gut feeling that there may be two opportunities for Bush, and I'm not sure they'll even present themselves tonight, given that they're, you know, allegedly real people asking real questions.
Sort of filtered.
Sort of. But one is that when you mentioned that phrase, you know, the logic matrix, I think Kerry still has a problem with the logic matrix when it comes to the war in Iraq.
Kerry's own logic matrix.
Kerry's own logic matrix. You know, Bush didn't do a good job of sort of breaking it open last week, but wrong war, wrong country, send more troops. That doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, to me as a security mom that Bill Schneider was perhaps talking about. So I see that
even
as
when you're in the war. I mean, he's trying to say, I wouldn't have done it this way, but now we're there, and so we've got to clean it up. Here's how I do it. You're saying it still doesn't play.
Send more troops. I don't like that answer, personally. So I see that as one opportunity of, you know, maybe being able to say this is not a logical flow, and Bush being able to reassert his own logic as to
what
should
happen.
Is John
Kerry saying send more American troops or send more allied troops?
I think he sent.
Well, I think he's saying send more allied troops. But let me tell you, if you're saying that this is the wrong war and the wrong time, do you really think that the Germans or the French would say, you're right, and so we're going to send our troops too? I think that Jones catching this logic flaw that everyone can see, whether it's American troops or whether it's allied troops, if it's the wrong war and the wrong time, how are you going to persuade the allies, who, by the way, have come out this week saying, we're not going to send troops?
And if I could just get to one other point that I think is an opportunity for Bush. The attack on Egypt refocuses...
This is the bombing in
the
Taba.
The bombing in Egypt. Refocuses the spotlight on the war on terror versus the war in Iraq.
But does it say the war on terror is still on, or does it say al-Qaeda has not been put in a box by this administration?
It says al-Qaeda can strike where it wants to strike. Maybe we need somebody who is not afraid to go where they are. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm just seeing that as a possible opening for him to say it's not all about this war that seems to be going badly in Iraq. It's about a larger global war. There it is, folks. Who do you trust more to, you know, to fight it?
I want to bring one more voice into this conversation. Joining us from Boston, Dan Payne. He's a Democratic political strategist, worked on John Kerry's Senate campaigns in the past. He's a political analyst for WBUR. Dan, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
So we're hearing our guest at the moment looking at John Kerry's position on Iraq and saying he's still got a problem here, wrong war, wrong place, wrong time, but then talking about putting more resources into fixing it. On the other hand, you've got this Dulfo report this week, which makes it look like it may have been the wrong war at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, what John Kerry is saying, and he's sort of moved his position substantially in the last few weeks, is that this war is a mess. And to continue to run it the way it is being run now is suicidal. We're not going to get the political solutions that we want. We're not going to accomplish much militarily. And we've got to rethink the whole thing. It just cannot continue in this way. And I think that's the opportunity for Kerry in this debate, is to point to the future. Do you really think this man, who completely misread the intelligence, who allowed himself to be manipulated into going to war, is now going to be able to figure a way out of this? He is in deep denial about the reality of Iraq. And so Kerry's chance is to say, we need a fresh start.
Dan, how important do you think these debates are? You know, last time, 61, maybe even 63 million people watched, could be less tonight. Though, I should note, the Red Sox-Angels game just finished. I think you were there in Fenway, Dan. What is it, 8-6 Red Sox in the end?
I'm proud to report an 8-6 extra innings win.
So some of those may come over and pay attention to the debate after all, not just watching the little white ball bounce. But
right.
what do you see riding on the debates themselves at this point?
Well, given the way the first debate shook up the campaign, and there have been moments like this throughout the campaign, each of the conventions shook up the race, and the first debate shook up the race. I think the debates have the potential to do that again and again. I don't think the vice presidential debate mattered much in terms of the tops of the ticket. But Bush is in a situation where he has never really, well, for 4 years in any event, he has not faced a crowd that was not completely pre-tested, pre-screened for their loyalty to the Republican Party. He's facing people who really have nothing to lose by challenging him. And when he has had to face professional interviewers, Kim Russert in the Oval Office, and then the White House press corps in his famous "I can't think of any mistakes I've made" performance, he hasn't done well. And he's now, in a situation where he's facing unknowns, and he's not the best shoot from the hip character in politics. And the way they campaign plays to Kerry's advantage as well. Kerry, you know, will work a room. He will ask questions. He will talk to people directly face to face. They don't pre-screen the questions. Sometimes they're tough, sometimes they're not. Bush, on the other hand, never gets anything but positive questions. So this is a real test for him. I wouldn't want to be in Bush's shoes tonight.
Well, I think both of them will be sweating a little bit, though. The temperature is agreed upon and controlled, like everything else here. let's turn to our callers for a moment. Listeners, you can join this conversation tonight. What do you think? Will George Bush have his swagger back tonight? Can John Kerry work this crowd? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Jim is calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. The thing I hope that happens tonight is that I hope that the American people, represented by the people there, give Bush really tough questions. They need some answers for what he's been doing. And I hope that it isn't that thing of being a very screened opportunity, very staged and everything. He needs to go face to face with the American people and answer some tough questions.
But you know, Jim, the president is kind of famously got this appeal that tends to work on a lot of people. You don't think it'll work in the hall tonight?
I don't think so, and I hope that what Abraham Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time, is going to start working, because we've got to get away from that. The American people have a right. We've got over 1,000 people who've been killed over in Iraq. We've got the tax deficit that's the historic first. We've lost all these jobs. He's got to answer some questions about what he's doing, and he can't hide behind it. And I don't want to see any of that mixmaster stuff. I want him to stand up and answer questions face-to-face to the American people.
Jim, we've got it loud and clear. John Vinacki, you're a good judge of people. You can see the setting here. We've got a little picture of it on the table in the studio here. Very antiseptic setting, these low stools. How do you think each of these men is going to do in this situation? Does this work back to George Bush's favor? What about John Kerry here with his long legs curled up on this perch? And how is he working the crowd? What are you anticipating?
Well, I guess I agree with Dan Payne in that Kerry, over the last, you know, year and a half, has had a lot more settings that would be similar to this kind of setting than the President of the United States, who, being the president, basically spends a lot of time in that bubble where, you know, he's very much protected from, you know, unfriendly crowds and people, et cetera. One thing that I think, you know, hasn't been really said yet is I think that post-debate spin may matter more this time than it did the last time.
Because why is that? It seems to be discounted on all fronts.
Well, it is a Friday night. Maybe the numbers will prove me wrong tomorrow.
You mean the reporters are going home to bed?
I'm thinking that fewer people will watch the whole thing from beginning to end. I mean, there's baseball on. They'll be flipping back and forth.
People are going to the bowling alley. They're out.
They may not be as riveted from beginning to end as the last time. So it may be to somebody's benefit, unlike the last time where a lot of people just sat through it, saw the whole thing, made their own judgments. They may be more open to post-debate, not the reporters, but that people will be getting their view on the basis of, you know, the spin doctors more than the last time around.
But Jim Nuzzo, last time after the debate, you know, I watched right across the spectrum, even on Fox News. It was pretty long faces, pretty grim assessment. Can you see, is there really an opportunity to spin here, given how aware people are of spin these days?
You got to remember that, as Joan was saying, tonight's a Friday night. often where people get the ideas to how they really view this debate is around sort of the truck when they're getting their bagel in the morning, mm-hmm. when they're sitting and talking on each other's desks before the work starts. Well, the work's not going to start until Monday. So there's a Friday night, late Friday night, there's a Saturday, there's a Sunday, in which the only people they're going to hear from are going to be people like us, talking heads. I mean, what was fascinating to me looking at the last debate is the first day, immediately after the debate, Bush had lost, but the numbers weren't that bad that Bush had lost. It was day two that the numbers turned to be 80-20 that Bush had lost.
Mm-hmm. When they mounted up.
It mounted up when the talking heads and what they heard around the mm-hmm. The cooler.
So without the cooler?
I think that you're right. People like us, unfortunately, they have a disproportionate amount of power.
Well, I'm not sure I agree.
Dan Payne.
I think the Washington press corps, especially those who travel with the candidates and follow the race closely, they go through the motions of standing around Spin Alley. And what they're looking for isn't so much a quote as body language. They want to see which side acts like it did well. But that's the extent to which they're influenced by the spinners. And I think the audience, frankly, is going to be quite large. There will be people who will be tuning in probably more for the first half hour. And if I were advising the candidates, I would say, throw your best shots in mm-hmm. the first 30 minutes.
Dan, let me ask you this. You saw how Kerry came across in the last debate, and he was judged winning with a kind of a little more austere, cool, tempered compared to Bush, who was, grimacing. Do you think that'll work tonight? How do you expect George Bush to come back at that with body language, with tone?
Well, Bush is, it wouldn't surprise me if Bush takes off his jacket and rolls up his sleeves, because he seems to be a slightly different character when he gets out of the blue suit. Mm-hmm. Kerry will probably match him if he does. But I think Kerry can play whatever role is needed here. I doubt that you're going to see as stern a prosecution of Bush when you have the involvement of a citizen in the question. So he'll be playing to the citizen, and so will Bush. I mean, we're going to be hearing, oh, what a wonderful question from both of them, and they're going to try to involve the questioner in their answer. I don't have any worries about whether John Kerry can shift gears, because that's what he has to do every day on the campaign trail.
Jim Nuzzo, what do you expect on body language?
I think this actually plays directly to Bush. When they made a determination how Bush was going to give his address to the convention, they put him in the round because that's how he feels most comfortable. George Bush is a guy who people like. And this gives him an opportunity to sort of play that off. The question for me is whether the patrician John Kerry, when he no longer has the ability to stand behind sort of the podium, whether or not he's going to be able to relate. A lot of times it's, can I stand listening to this person for 4 years?
Yep.
And that's the question. Can John Kerry get that likability across as well?
Well, we will see in just a few minutes. We're going to have to take a short break here. Dan Payne, I know we have to let you go.
Okay.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Democratic political strategist Dan Payne, Jim Nuzzo, Joan Vinaki, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We are talking about Bush-Kerry Round 2. The debate in St. Louis tonight starts in just about 20 minutes now. You can join our conversation. Here's a question. Who's the news helping this week? On Iraq, on the economy. And what's your question this time for the men in St. Louis? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are raising the curtain tonight on debate number 2 in the presidential campaign debates. Bush-Kerry tonight in St. Louis on the campus of Washington University, starting just a little under 20 minutes from now. I'm joined tonight by Joan Vinaki, columnist for the Boston Globe, Jim Nuzzo, Republican political strategist, a contributor to the National Review Online, and our own Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation as well. Do you expect a repeat of round 1, the Miami round, tonight in St. Louis, or something different from these two men in this different set? And what about it for you? What does each candidate still have to prove in these debates? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got a call from St. Louis. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I think personality-wise, George Bush is coming in here with a great advantage because he is more likable. But from the other debates, it seems like if Kerry can sort of hit him, he tends to get rattled. And I think if Kerry can do that, that'll show. And also, Bush's constant attacking him for flip-flopping, I think if Kerry can sort of shift that and to the sort of trustworthiness and truthfulness aspect, in Wisconsin today, Michael Moore said that Kerry should respond by saying that we listened to you because you were the president and we believed you, and what you were saying turned out not to be true. Well, I don't think he should be quite as invective as Michael Moore. I think it's a good way to shift the sort of blame from flip-flopping to truthfulness.
So you're saying go straight out of it. And, Rick, you've got to tell us, in St. Louis, what's the buzz there? Are people excited to have the candidates in town?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. Everyone's all over the place. I'm actually on my way home now to watch the debate, but it's definitely a big deal. And we've had debates in St. Louis before. They're off.
Right.
I think in the last election, WashU did one.
Yeah. So you've seen it before, but here it comes again. Everybody wants to be right there in the heart of the country and near the Mason-Dixon line. It works in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, and Missouri's a cross-section. It's a good place to have a debate.
Rick, thanks very much for calling. Jack Beatty, let me go to you on that. Rick says, Bush is likable. Kerry should come out punching to throw him off his stride. The president may not be accustomed to being challenged, but can Kerry bring into this room tonight the kind of challenges that he's laid down on the road this week? He said that Mr. Bush and his vice president are, quote, or may well be the last two people on the planet who won't face the truth about Iraq. Can John Kerry be that direct, that forward, in the president's face in St. Louis, Jack?
Well, I mean, as others have said, in front of live voters, probably not. They don't want to be put off by, heated rhetoric. But he can weave a web, and at the center of the web, as Rick suggests, can be this notion of telling the truth. I've already pointed out how Mr. Bush has abused the truth in the claims that he has made about Kerry. I had 12 false claims. There are more. So Kerry can weave that right into the report this week on the on no weapons of mass destruction. But if I may, Tom, let me just go back to a couple of points here.
Sure.
The comparison was made with Reagan in 84. Well, growth was over 5%. The jobs were populating. It was the jobs boom of the 80s. There was no foreign war. Reagan had smartly taken the troops out of Lebanon, and Reagan's approval was over 50%. So I don't really think there's any comparison.
But for all that, Jack, he was adjudged to have lost the first debate with Walter Mondale.
He was, but he had a residuum that Bush doesn't have. The record was things were going good for him in the world. They're not for Bush. And then the other thing is, in these debates with Town Hall Forum, the crucial thing is to be alive to the music of the questioner's question and not get caught up in the lyrics. By which I mean, the great example is 1992, when a woman asked President Bush, the president's father, she was very concerned about the deficit, and she mentioned that as well as some other things. And Bush thought the question really was about the deficit, and he talked about all the things he was doing. Well, it was really her way. It wasn't. It was really her way of saying, I'm very worried about my life. I'm very worried about my family. What can I do to get things under control? Clinton had his great moment. He just went right over to her, and he said, things are really tough, aren't they?
I feel your pain.
And, it's the subtext of the question. You've got to be imaginative. People don't talk like the Brookings Institution. They grope. And the music is just as important as the lyrics.
Joan, I think Jack has put his finger on something really important about this town hall format. Who's better at picking up the subtext? I mean, George Bush is no slouch on this front. He's famously known for being able to judge people. How do you put these two men side by side? When that question comes forward, who's going to see the inner question, the music, as Jack puts it?
Well, I think it will depend on who's listening harder and, who just is concentrating on the person asking the question and not, racing ahead to, try to score points
last
in a debate.
Question, next question.
Right. I was just going to pick up slightly on Jack's mention of the truth, and I guess this will speak to why I will be a journalist and never a politician, because my answer to the truth for Kerry would be, which I think would win the debate and the election, is we both were wrong. on Iraq.
So John Kerry, a little mea culpa here, too,
we
please.
We were both wrong on weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein. I was wrong to vote to authorize war, and you were wrong to bring us to war.
President Bush, this week, has been quoting John Kerry from a speech a couple years back talking about the threat of Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons. Of course, the Kerry campaign came back out saying with a fuller quote from Kerry, where he goes on to say that if we can't nail it down, just regime change alone is not enough to do, but we're very likely to hear something on that front tonight. Jim Nuzzo, we are also absolutely dead certain to hear about the economy and
no
jobs with these numbers out today. Bad timing for President Bush. Just 96,000 jobs created in the most recent forecast. They were expecting, they were expecting 150,000. And as you know, it takes 150 to 200,000 just to keep up with the growth of the labor pool in the United States. So this ain't doing it. And 18,000 manufacturing jobs lost. John Kerry's going to be pounding on that.
Of course he is. But there's several things we have to look at. One is we take a look at that 98,000 jobs, 96,000 jobs, and we have to realize this is after we've had four hurricanes that have absolutely devastated the Southeast. And they said that that was worth 45,000 jobs in and of themselves.
Well, they may have said it then, but to be fair, today in the Labor Department's report, they discounted the hurricanes in this number. I just have to point it out.
Well,
part of the report.
Yes, but then I've also seen some of the other folks that came out from the Fed who said that they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's a debate there. The second thing is 5.4 is as the unemployment rate was the same unemployment rate that Clinton had in 1996 when he got reelected. 5.4 historically has been a very, very good job rate. Now, do I think that the American public looks at this and says we have jobs that are going great guns? I think that you're absolutely right. They don't. But what the question that the president is going to have to say is, look, we went through what is a typical cycle in an economy. We had a huge boom in the 1990s. There are typical cycles. We're coming out of it. On top of that typical cycle was that we also had suffered September 11th. So we had, if you will, a double whammy. And the fact that we are only 500,000 jobs down from the beginning of my administration.
Or 600,000, or, you know, the numbers are all over. But we get your point.
When we're at that particular number, given the fact that we've gone through the cyclic change, gone through the fact that we have had an attack on the motherland, this should be seen as the basis for what is going to be a long-term good economy. If I'm George Bush, I talk about the future in the economy. I basically sort of say, not who could have done better for in the past 4 years, but who,
but
which one of us.
Now,
I'm going to give you a tax cut. He wants to increase your taxes. Which one of us do you believe is really going to be able to spur the economy forward? That's the way in which I would do it if I was Bush.
Joan Vernacki, Kerry Camp clearly anticipating that. They have today released what they're calling a pre-buttal, a rebuttal before the debate even, talking about George Bush's propensity to view the world through rose-colored glasses. I can hear John Kerry picking up on these numbers today, which President Bush will want to put a good gloss on, and saying, in effect, there he goes again in Iraq on the economy. He's just not squaring up with the facts.
Right. I think the economy right now, in a psychological way, plays to Kerry. 5.4% unemployment, you know, back then versus now, two different animals. I think people have a different feel about joblessness or insecurity about their own jobs, and right now that plays to Kerry. That's why, for all the trouble Bush has with Iraq, I bet he'd still rather keep the debate on the war on terror in Iraq than on the economy.
The Goldman Sachs economist Ed McKelvey today is saying this grudging labor participation exposes an underlying vulnerability to the economic recovery. That soft patch of the summer, economist warning, may be going on, maybe not. Christine is calling from Panama, New York. Hi, Christine. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling because I'm, you know, sort of interested to see what it's going to be like this week. I watched the debate last Thursday, and this week I'm traveling, so I'm listening to it on the radio.
So it's voice only this time.
Yeah, not being able to see the president's reaction to Kerry's responses and so forth, and having to, you know, catch news excerpts when I get, you know, to where I'm going, showing the coverage from the debate.
Yeah, that will be interesting. So you're taking the visual out of it. What do you expect from that, Christine?
I'm not really sure. I'm a Republican, and I was behind Bush 4 years ago, but I live in a small town in western New York, and we're seeing jobs flying out of the area and sort of wondering what Kerry can do to help us out around here.
Christine, let me ask you. Let me ask you, if I may, after last week's appearance, President Bush came back out on the campaign trail. He made a joke about it, saying, you know, if you were there hearing all the distortions or something to that effect that I heard from John Kerry, you'd be making a face, too. You're a Republican. You saw the president last week. How much, you know, the media is talking a lot about his facial expressions. How much did his apparent unease on camera matter to you, or did it not?
It did, and I've seen him in other speeches that he's done, stumbling over words and so forth, and in my opinion, I want a president who's going to give me a clear message, who, when he speaks to me, isn't stumbling over his words, isn't appearing nervous.
And how did you judge John Kerry on that score?
I think he did much better in presenting himself. Calm, you know, he seemed calm, he seemed in control compared to Bush.
Christine, we've got it, a Republican on the road. Thanks for calling in. Dennis is calling from Holt, Michigan. Hi, Dennis, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a question. I guess it could be for, wish it would be for both candidates. I know it's hard to look past all the campaign funds coming in from the drug companies. But I'd love to see somebody take the courage to make the suggestion to have Americans pay just a little bit less and charge the rest of the world a little bit more and try and even things out on the issue of drug costs.
So you want to see drug prices come down, Dennis?
Well, I hate to see that Americans pay an exorbitantly higher amount than we charge everybody else.
Dennis, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Joan, there is a whole panoply of issues that we could get to be hearing about tonight because it's the audience asking, and Dennis is hardly alone in caring about drug prices. Do you expect it's going to get stuck in Iraq in the economy, or do you expect it to trot right around the track here?
I think it will take up more than Iraq and the economy, and people, real people care about health care. Real people care about, you know, drug costs. So I would be surprised if those kinds of questions didn't come up tonight. We're almost to the point of finding out what actually happens, Tom, rather than speculating.
Yes, we are. Just a few minutes now. Jim Nuzzo, how worried are you or are you not for President Bush tonight?
Frankly, I'm not. I think this plays best for him. I think this is the exact sort of way in which he'd like to come back. But he has to hit a good triple tonight. He can't just get away with sort of doing, you know, a little bit of single A ball. He has to give his best game.
Well, it's baseball all over the place this evening. Red Sox victory. We'll see what happens in St. Louis. It's been fascinating having both of you on. Jim Nuzzo, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
Republican political analyst and contributor for the National Review Online, Jim Nuzzo. And Joan Vernocchi, columnist with the Boston Globe. Wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Nice to be here.
Jack, we've got a minute left to look out on this scene and what's unfolding in St. Louis and across the country right now. Absolutely fascinating. We're back in flux. This is truly wide up in the air again, and maybe even a tinge of advantage carry.
It may be. He's been coming back in the polls, but it can go either way. I mean, Bush is popular with half the country, and I think people are still making up their minds about Kerry. Kerry's got two things going for him. Reality. The fact is, the worst record on jobs since Herbert Hoover, and a war we now know was unnecessary. Officially, there was no imminent threat. These are tough things for a president to deal with.
Well, many ways to describe reality. We'll no doubt hear that again tonight. We'll be back with the next campaign debate in Tempe, Arizona, next week, Wednesday night. Jack Beatty, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Gregorian Oriental.